Southern FM is celebrating 30 years on air.
On FM, online, and on TuneIn, 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
Welcome to episode 5 of our Planet Earth series. Now, these programs are a mix of factual reports, poetry, and fanciful music, but all of them are about our home planet. When we left you last week, we were partway through a song called Every Part of the Earth is Sacred. And it was sung by the McRobertson Chamber Voices with the McRobertson Chamber Ensemble from the McRobertson Girls High School in South Melbourne. And this piece was composed by Stephen Leek. So why don't we sort of pick up from where we left off and hear the rest of that wonderful song. From the very talented girls at the McRobertson Girls High School, part of the earth is sacred. In fact, every part of the earth is sacred. And they're wonderful teachers, that the music teachers there that guide them through those pieces of music. This is our Earth show. The United States and French space agencies have agreed to jointly build, launch and operate a spacecraft to conduct the first ever global survey of Earth's surface water. It will also map ocean surface height with unprecedented detail. The agreement is between the National Aeronautics and Space Administration and the Centre National d'Etudes Spatiales. The satellite is called SWOT, S-W-O-T, which is an acronym for surface, water and ocean topography. The two agencies began initial joint studies on the mission in 2009. They plan to complete preliminary design activities in 2016 and to launch the satellite in 2020. That launch has now been postponed until next year, 2021. It will survey 90% of the globe, studying lakes, rivers, reservoirs, and ocean. This will aid in freshwater management around the world. Other benefits will be improved ocean circulation models and weather and climate predictions. NASA will provide the SWAT payload module, the Ka-band radar interferometer instrument, the microwave radiometer and antenna, a laser retroreflector array, a global positioning system receiver, ground support, and launch services. The French space agency, CNES, will provide the SWAT spacecraft bus, the radar interferometer's radio frequency unit, the dual frequency NADAR altimeter, the Doppler orbitography and radio positioning integrated receiver package, satellite command and control, and data processing infrastructure. NASA and CNES began collaborating on missions to monitor ocean surfaces changes in the 1980s. To that end, joint satellites were launched in 1992, 2001, and 2008. SWAT will bounce radar signals off water to measure its altitude above the ocean, lakes and reservoirs and wetlands. A more complete inventory of Earth's lakes and the changing amount of water they hold will yield improved assessments of how climate-induced changes can impact freshwater resources worldwide. Only 15% of lakes around the world are currently measured from space. SWAT will be able to measure the ocean surface with 10 times the resolution of current technologies. This will allow scientists to study small-scale features that are key components of how heat and carbon are exchanged between the ocean and atmosphere. SWAT observations will enable researchers to compute the velocity and energy of ocean circulation. A better understanding of small-scale ocean currents and eddies is also important to impacts on coastal regions. These impacts include navigation, erosion, and dispersing pollutants. To the Goddard Space Flight Center, where Brent Gary is a geologist. Now, the Goddard Space Flight Center is in Maryland, just outside of Washington. And, he's going to tell us about why he studies volcanoes.
To me, volcanism is important to study because it is one of the most common and fundamental geologic processes that occurs in our solar system. It's a window into the history of our own planet, of the moon, and the other planets and moons in our solar system. My name is Brent Gary, and I'm a geologist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. I specialize in planetary volcanology, so it's my job to study the evolution of volcanoes and lava flows in our solar system, primarily on the Earth, the Moon, and Mars. What we're trying to answer is, how do these volcanoes evolve over time? When did they erupt? And kind of what went on during the eruption process itself? When we get images back from the moon of these long meandering depressions called sinuous rills that look like rivers here on Earth, you know, we want to understand, are these the remnants of collapsed lava tubes? Did the lava carve its way into the surface of the moon to leave these giant channels? Or in the case of Mars, the debate is whether or not these were carved by water or fluvial activity, or if they're carved by lava flows or volcanic activity. One of the best ways to answer these questions is by comparing the information and data we get back from the moon and Mars to geologic features that we have right here on Earth. One of the exciting parts of my job is I get to travel around the world. I get to go to New Mexico, Hawaii, even Iceland to do my research. I love this part of my job because I get to hike up volcanoes all day. We're hiking around desolate, you know, fields of lava. We're taking helicopter rides over these flow fields. We're looking at active lava flows that are going on, and even collecting samples of these features to study.
I'll try this at home, kid.
Our field team uses a wide range of instruments to do our work. We use things like a differential GPS, which gives us the topography of the lava flows. We use a ground-penetrating radar, which allows us to see in the subsurface of the flow field. And we also use a thermal imaging camera, which allows us to see the differences in temperature across an active lava flow. A lot of people might think that studying geology is just looking at boring rocks all day, but my job here at NASA proves that geology is an adventure. It takes you around the world and also to the surfaces of other planets and moons in our solar system.
NASA has selected a first-of-its-kind Earth science mission that will extend the measurement of key greenhouse gases and vegetation from space. It will advance understanding of Earth's natural exchanges of carbon between the land, atmosphere, and ocean. The satellite instrument will be called GEOCARB, which is an acronym for Geostationary Carbon Cycle Observatory. As its name suggests, the host satellite will be placed into geostationary orbit some 35,400 kilometers above the equator. It will hover over the Americas and be able to observe both North and South America. The primary goals of GEOCARB are to monitor plant health and vegetation stress throughout the Americas. It will also probe, in unprecedented detail, the natural sources, sinks, and exchange processes that control carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, and methane in the atmosphere. GEOCARB will be hosted aboard a commercial communications satellite to be launched in 2021. By doing this, rather than having its own dedicated satellite, NASA expects to save costs. Over the next 5 years, NASA has allocated $166 million to develop, operate, and analyze data from GEOCARB's instrument. NASA intends to make the technology available to other nations. But don't hold your breath. The realistic cynic in me says we won't see GEOCARB flying on an Australian Optus or National Broadband Network's SkyMuster satellite. Now to Michael Jackson. He's going to read a poem about planet Earth. And, well, it's simply called Planet Earth.
My home, my place, a capricious anomaly in the sea of space. Planet Earth, are you just floating by a cloud of dust? A minor globe about to bust, a piece of metal bound to rust, a speck of matter in a mindless void, a lonely spaceship, a large asteroid. Cold as a rock, without a hue, held together with a bit of glue, something tells me this isn't true. You are my sweetheart, soft and blue. Do you care? Have you a part in the deepest emotions of my own heart? Tender with breezes, caressing and whole, alive with music, haunting my soul. In my veins, I felt the mystery of corridors of time, books of history. Life songs of ages throbbing in my blood have danced to the rhythm of the tide and flood. Your misty clouds, your electric storm, were turbulent tempest in my own form. I've licked the salt, the bitter, the sweet, of every encounter, of passion, of heat. Your riotous color, your fragrance, your taste, have thrilled my senses beyond all haste. In your beauty, I've known the how of timeless bliss, this moment of now. Planet Earth, are you just floating by, a cloud of dust, a minor globe about to bust, a piece of metal bound to rust, a speck of matter in a mindless void, a lonely spaceship, a large asteroid. Cold as a rock, without a hue, held together with a bit of glue, something tells me this isn't true. You are my sweetheart, gentle and blue. Do you care? Have you a part in the deepest emotions of my own heart? Tender with breezes, caressing and whole, alive with music, haunting my soul. Planet Earth, gentle and blue, with all my heart, I love you.
That poem was paired with the song Earth Song on Jackson's remix album, Immortal.
Southern FM's 30th anniversary is this month.
Earth, below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
When on May the 4th of 2019, SpaceX launched its 17th commercial resupply mission to the International Space Station, scientists were paying more than curious interest. That is because it was ferrying a new scientific instrument to be attached to the space station. This was the Third Orbiting Carbon Observatory, otherwise known as OCO-3, O-C-O. After the Dragon capsule was berthed to the station, two robotic arms lifted OCO-3 from the cargo ship and installed it on the exterior of the Japanese Experiment Module Exposed Facility. On May 11th and 12th, the instrument was tested and declared operational. From its orbit some 400 kilometres above the Earth, OCO-3 is now capturing snapshot maps of carbon dioxide over areas of interest. OCO-3 is also measuring solar-induced chlorophyll fluorescence. This is a very faint glow that plants emit during photosynthesis. OCO-3 is making observations from just after sunrise to just before sunset over a plus or minus 52 degrees latitude range. That latitude range is determined by the orbital parameters of the space station. And very interesting to see some of the data returned from that, and it shows the impact that the coronavirus shutdowns have had on the levels of carbon dioxide, especially in industrial areas.
Planet Earth is blue.
Now, Leland Melvin is an American engineer and retired NASA astronaut. He flew two space missions aboard the space shuttle Atlantis in 2008 and 2009. Both flights went to the International Space Station. In all, he spent 595 hours in space, and that's almost 25 days. He has a strong interest in education and a fine regard for our home planet. Here, he reads a poem written by Pablo Neruda about the Chilean forest.
Pablo Neruda gives us perspective. Seeing the Chilean forest from space, it lets you know that life is beautiful. Under the volcanoes beside the snow-capped mountains, among the huge lakes, the fragrant, the silent, the tangled Chilean forest. My feet sink down into the dead leaves. A fragile twig crackles. The giant Raleigh trees rise in all their bristling height. A bird from the cold jungle passes over, flaps its wings, and stops in the sunless branches. And then, from its hideaway, it sings like an oboe. The wild scent of the laurel, the dark scent of the boldo herb, enter my nostrils and flood my whole being. The cypress of the Gautecas blocks my way. This is the vertical world, a nation of birds, a plentitude of leaves. I stumble over a rock, dig up the uncovered hollow. An enormous spider covered with red hair stares up at me, motionless, as huge as a crab. A golden carabus beetle blows its mephitic breath at me as its brilliant rainbow disappears like lightning. Going on, I pass through a forest of ferns, much taller than I am. From their cold green eyes, 60 tears splash down on my face. And behind me, their fans go on quivering for a long time. A decaying tree trunk, what a treasure. Black and blue mushrooms have given it ears. Red parasite plants have covered it with rubies. Other lazy plants have let it borrow their beards. And a snake springs out of the rotted body like a sudden breath, as if the spirit of the dead trunk were slipping away from it. Farther along, each tree stands away from its fellows. They soar up over the carpet of the secretive forest, and the foliage of each has its own style, linear, bristling, ramulous, lanceolate. As if cut by shears moving in infinite ways, a gorge below. The crystal water slides over granite and jasper. A butterfly goes past, bright as a lemon, dancing between the water and the sunlight. Close by, innumerable calceolarias nod their little heads in greeting. High up, red kofihus dangle like drops from the magic forest arteries. A fox cuts through the silence like a flash, sending a shiver through the leaves. But silence is the law of the plant kingdom. The barely audible cry of some bewildered animal far off. The piercing interruption of a hidden bird. The vegetable world keeps up its low rustle until a storm chums up all the music of the earth. Anyone who hasn't been in the Chilean forest doesn't know this planet. I have come out of that landscape, that mud, that silence, to roam, to go singing through the world.
That was NASA astronaut Leland Melvin, the Chilean forest. Luca Parmitano is an Italian astronaut in the European Space Agency. He has flown on two long-duration missions aboard the International Space Station. Did he notice any changes to the Earth's environment in the 6 years between the two missions?
The answer is yes to both questions, and that yes is not a very good answer, actually. I probably need to expand. The one that really, truly shocked me in terms of visual impact was looking at the Amazon forest. When I first flew in 2013, flying over the Amazon forest was this blanket of green that just occupied the whole field of view. You would just look outside and see these dark green spotted with white clouds because of the typical weather over the Amazon. It's wet and humid, it rains often. And then you would see the rivers, but it went from horizon to horizon. and we see about 6,000 kilometers of Earth from the cupola, and it would just be this one view of green. And then I flew again this year, and the first time that I started taking pictures of the Amazon forest, I was shocked by how much of it had been stolen to make space for fields, cultivated fields, cattle fields. Of course, I cannot tell a difference, but you see these huge patches that are yellow and light green or different colors depending on what the cultivation is. But they are obvious because they are geometric, they're square, rectangular, huge patches. And we are talking regions the size of southern Italy, all stolen from the forest to make space for cultivations, human farms. That was one of the most shocking. And then the other one that really hurt to see was the glaciers. I had this beautiful image in my mind of these glaciers as flowing, huge, majestic, flowing rivers of ice. And of course, they're flowing at a very slow pace, but everything slows at a very slow pace from 400 kilometers away. And then going back last year, even though the time was pretty much the same, I flew in the summer, launched in spring, landed in November, and the first mission, the second mission I launched in the summer, came back in the middle of winter. But I saw the same time frame, and there was no doubt in my mind that when I compared the pictures, I have confirmation that the glaciers are retracting. They are much, much smaller, as a matter of fact. So those two are two points, two visual images that really, really, really hurt, that made me feel so small and incapable of affecting the destiny just as a single human.
Italian astronaut Luca Parmitano. Measurements of the energy output from the sun is crucial to our understanding of our climate. The only reliable way to measure what is called the total solar radiance is from outer space. To that end, continuous measurements have been made by satellites for the past 42 years. One of those satellites had been in operation for 16 and a half years when it began to fail. It is the Solar Radiation and Climate Experiment, otherwise referred to by its acronym SOARCE. Designed to operate for 9 years, it was limping along, tended by an anxious ground control. It had a failed reaction wheel. These spinning wheels were used to keep the satellite pointed at the sun. It also had a failed star tracker. Now, this is essentially a small telescope that points at known stars to tell ground controls which way the satellite is oriented. Consider also SOARCE's battery. Now, you probably replace the battery in your car every 2 years or so. The battery in this satellite was nearly 17 years old, so it came as no surprise that it was ailing with diminishing power. Because of the battery, SOARCE was last year shutting down during each orbit's eclipse, only to reawaken 45 minutes later when its solar panels were illuminated at every sunrise. One of the results of the SOARCE satellite mission is a precise measurement of the total solar irradiance. That is 1,361 watts per square meter illuminating the Earth. Another achievement of SOARCE is the first daily record of solar spectral irradiance. In other words, how much of each wavelength, color if you will, comes from the sun. Unfortunately, all good things come to an end. SOARCE ended operations on February the 25th of this year. This completed more than 17 years of exceptional observations. Meanwhile, other instruments are now in orbit to carry the solar irradiance record into the next decade. One of these is the Total and Spectral Solar Irradiance Sensor No. 1, which was launched in 2017. Whereas Source was a free-flying satellite, TSIS-1 has been attached to the International Space Station. Thus far, TSIS-1 has been performing as designed. Comparisons between Source and TSIS-1 measurements show that they agree. This is surprising since the two were built 15 years apart and TSIS-1 uses newer technology. The Source satellite does not have any onboard fuel, therefore it was not possible to perform a controlled re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. The passivation of Source involved powering off instruments and most spacecraft systems. The craft's reaction wheels have been disabled and the radio communication systems switched off. The derelict satellite's orbit will slowly decay due to atmospheric drag. It is expected to re-enter and burn up in the atmosphere in 2032. Meanwhile, scientists from the University of Colorado are flying a technology demonstration mission called the Compact Spectral Irradiance Monitor. This small satellite is of the type called a CubeSat. It was launched in 2018 December and is still flying. Data from the first 3 months of operation showed exceptional agreement with the Spectral Irradiance Monitor on TSIS-1. A second TSIS is being built and at the beginning of this year passed its design review. To be launched in 2023, TSIS-2 will be a free-flying satellite. The instruments on TSIS-2 will be identical to those on TSIS-1, ensuring a continuity of data about the sun's energy reaching the Earth. This data is needed to call the lie to those who deny anthropogenic atmospheric carbon dioxide and methane is the major cause of global warming. Some deniers claim that our world is heating because the sun is getting hotter. Source has shown that the irradiance does vary over the solar cycle, particularly at X-ray wavelengths, but not over longer periods of time. The Americans don't have the study of solar irradiance and its effect on the Earth to themselves. Norwegian scientists have long been involved with the Source satellite. In 2017, the Norwegian Space Agency orbited a nanosatellite called NORSAT-1. Aboard was CLARA, C-L-A-R-A, the Compact Lightweight Absolute Radiometer. The data from CLARA has been compared with those from the American satellites. To explore any possible relationship between solar activity and climate change on Earth, two new missions are being developed. One is CLARIO Pathfinder. Now, CLARIO is an acronym for Climate Absolute Radiance and Refractivity Observatory. This imaging spectrometer will be mounted on the International Space Station in 2023. Its aim will be to demonstrate high accuracy measurements of the solar radiation scattered from Earth. The second Earth climate demonstration is a three-unit CubeSat called SIMBA, which stands for Sun-Earth Imbalance. The longer-term objective of SIMBA and follow-on missions is a direct measurement of Earth radiation imbalance. In other words, to see whether incoming radiation from the Sun is equal to outgoing radiation from the Earth. SIMBA is being developed by Belgium's Royal Meteorological Institute for the European Space Agency. This is our session on planet Earth, and we're going to give you a little taste of what might open next week's show. Story Musgrave, a former astronaut, and he has a thing here called Amazonia.
Are we ready to go? Okay. Amazonia. pine cone, life's longing for life. Wind winding, coning down the ground, life's love for life. Waves of waving purples and yellows, singing chimes upon my eyes. Yellow purple symbiotic spectrum. Bluebells flowing, the sounds of growing, fragrant fertility flowering my imagination. Vines in vineyards, life clinging to life, canopies of greens painted on a blue canvas. Fallen trees, fertile ground, rotting life, the living death.